Hello everyone, and welcome to my podcast adventure. I'm Steve Walker, a wild camper and adventurer, travelling to remote areas in Scotland. Here I will be talking about the journey, the scenery, foods, and the kit I use. It doesn't matter who you are, or your abilities, or your age. All you need to do is sit back and relax and listen, as you and I join the wilds that Scotland has to offer. So join me as I take you camping on the wild side. This week's adventure sees me arrive at a little car park in the village of Muirkirk in East Ayrshire, in Scotland. I arrived way later than I wanted to because of some work commitments. So with that out the way, it was now mid-afternoon when I parked the car. I had recently mapped this area for an adventure and originally wanted to start from a large forestry at the other side. But seeing a few comments regarding private roads, it was going to be a longer walk in. So I took the safer option, and I thought, I'll start from Muirkirk. Anyway, back to the adventure. It was a nice cool day with some clouds in the sky. The sun was out, and it was looking good. Taking my rucksack out the car and putting on my walking boots, and then sorting all the bits and pieces. I have to say, it's always a faff at this point, as many things run through your head. Like, have I packed everything? Or have I forgotten anything? It never changes, does it? You'll know what I mean. So locking the car, and with all my gear on and my rucksack on my back, I headed up the gravel path of the car park onto the grassy track, up to a wooden stile that had seen better days. It was pretty wobbly and falling to bits, is what I mean to say. The path led through a scattering of old derelict buildings, which I didn't really pay much attention to until I got back near the car the next day. I'll talk about these later, which I think you'll find pretty interesting. Leaving the village of Muirkirk behind, and now leaving the soft grassy paths, now for mud and stone. See, walking on mud and stone actually makes you feel like you're actually in the wilds, and makes you feel more like a hiker, rather than just walking on a little path. That's how I feel anyway. The mud paths were scattered with these well-made walking boards, which were pretty sturdy. Most of the peat had eroded around each end, so they were becoming pretty redundant. Soon becoming steeper, I came across a small cairn or a pile of stones about halfway up. This was a great spot to have a break, so out with a water bottle and a bar of chocolate. I sat for about 5 minutes for a breather and taking in these amazing views. It was actually great. Soon I was putting everything back in my rucksack and setting off for the summit of the cairn table. I didn't have far to go, it just took me a little while with the weight of this rucksack, so that slowed me down. Nearing the summit, I noticed a huge pyramid of stones. It was a well-built cairn standing very proud on the summit. This was actually a memorial cairn for the soldiers of the past wars. It was very humbling to see such a big effort had been put into a structure so far out the way and so far up the hill. To the left was the true cairn, marking the summit of 593 metres, or 1,945 feet. On the stone trig point marker was an engraving metal compass, allowing you to see not only north, south, east and west, but more prominent points and features of the land, and which direction they were in, like Ben Lomond, Heads of Ayr, and Tinto Hill, to name some. At this point of the day, it was actually quite breezy with low cloud, which made long distance points very hard to make out, but you get the idea. So if you are coming up here, it's well worth bringing a pair of binoculars so you can get the better views of the surrounding area in more detail. As I was taking in the views, a trail runner came up the back. We had a little chat and found out she was very local, so it was a good time to ask if I was on the right path. Our chat lasted about 5 or 10 minutes, and then she headed off down the path I'd just come up from with her two lovely dogs. They were loving the fresh air, and they were pretty hyper to be out and about. She gave me advice as to what path I should be on, and the best way to get to my destination. So, my direction of travel had now changed, just slightly. I wasn't going to just head away quickly from here, so I found a very quiet spot at the side of the memorial cairn, which was sheltered out of that wind. I had a couple of boiled eggs for a snack, along with some water, and of course, some more chocolate for energy. Yes, I know it's a strange combination of food, but needs must. And I'd already burnt a lot of calories getting here, so I needed a good amount of energy. After a nice stop, I could feel myself seizing up, so it was a good time to get myself moving again. Getting my bearings sorted, I headed off down from the top of the cairn table, on a different path. It was actually nice to be walking downhill for a change, to give my legs a little break. As I set off walking down the path, I bumped into a little stone spring that had been built into the ground. And more interestingly, there was a metal cup to have a drink from, which was connected to a metal chain, secured to a rock. Obviously to stop being taken away. Anyway, the answer was yes, of course. I did have a drink from this spring, and from the cup. It was probably one of these must-do things when you're on your travels and you're this far up. So it was a nice little quirky thing to do. So after a quick drinking stop, I was still descending on the track and heading for a bridge at the bottom, somewhere that crossed the river. I did think about taking a shortcut, straight across, down to the river and up the other side, heading over the rugged moor. But my safety head was turned on and I decided to take the safe route, which is always the best option. Eventually reaching the bridge at the bottom, I crossed over and started to head up the next piece of ground on the stone track up through the moorland, surrounded by heather. I think this was still, or was, a grouse moor at some point for shooting. It had all the characteristics of it. I followed the track that went up the sloping hill away into the distance. I'm not sure about you, but when you're not walking very fast and you see a path away in front of you heading what looks like miles into the distance, it plays a bit mind games with your head. So I was actually feeling a bit behind schedule and pressured at this time. This eventually became grass and quickly to mud with areas of bog. Reaching a metal gate that took me to the next section of moor, I was nearing my destination. The day had started late, and added more time with me climbing the cairn table, so a couple of extra hours to my journey was added. It was now, I'm going to guess, about 5:30, and I was very aware of the time in my head. The sun was starting to go down, and that was another big pressure which was added. So I pushed on. It was hard going at this section, as the track was completely swamped. Constant use of motorbikes, and the use of quad bikes from farming side and other various vehicles had actually destroyed the path. So they were using fresh ground either side and so on and so on. So the path and tracks were now getting wider and wider each time. Not great. I followed this path as best as I could and for as long as I could until I came to a section on the map that took me down a little gutter. This was me using them as a guide to get to my camping spot, and it was a safer and quicker route. One thing that stood out was the lack of wildlife. Plenty sheep dotted about, and I get that, because that was a sheep moor, and wildlife was very quiet, so there was no signs of any deer, rabbits, or hares. And even the birds were very quiet, So this was a very quiet moor. But what I did see a lot of was fox droppings. In fact, there was lots of fox droppings. They were everywhere. So maybe they were to blame. Foxes can do a lot of damage when they scour the moors at night, eating eggs and chicks and various birds. So they can cover a huge amount of ground each night, as well as badgers do as well. But you never know. But that's nature for you. One gutter led to another one, until I was on the final walk to the camping spot. The sun had gone down, and I was seeing the last 20 minutes of daylight. I came around the hill face next to a river and seen where I was wanting to get to on the map, but the ground was just going to be so hard to get to. And that had to make me think very fast and make a decision on the spot. Just in time, I came across a relatively decent spot. With a quick decision, this was it. This was now my camping spot. So the rucksack off, tent out, I made this spot safe from any stones and debris that would cause me an issue at night. So before I set up this tent, I want to take you back about 30 minutes ago, when I stopped to watch the sunset. A big ball of fire, bright orange. It was absolutely beautiful. It slowly glowed brighter as it came down through the cloud into the last part of clear sky. Seeing the full circle of it was just amazing. I always get pretty excited when I see the sun setting, as it makes you reflect on your day and gets you thinking about life in many ways. It's a peaceful time, and reflection can be anything you want it to be. It's amazing how quickly the sun does set, and each part of it is special. The last slither of sun disappeared as I was walking down, and with the final bit of glow, it was gone. A magical experience that we should all be blessed to witness such things. With the cold starting to nip since the sun disappeared, it was now time to get this tent up before I couldn't see a thing. The choice of tent was the OEX Bobcat 1. A simple but effective little tent. It's a small one-man tent that most people would probably say is way too small and cramped, but I love it. It's simple to put up and very quick to do so. I also like it, since I can fit it into my rucksack on most times. So pegging out the outer fly sheet and then the inner, it's quick to do, and finally the guy lines making them secure. I have a Gore-Tex sheet that I lay on the floor, then place my air mat on top and then my sleeping bag, which was the Mountain Warehouse Extreme Down, which I do like. Dark was nearly here, and I was glad the tent was up. Placing a light bulb style torch inside the tent above my head allowed me to get on with things. Getting my bed clothes, a hot water bottle into my sleeping bag, where I knew where they were. I could now breathe, just about everything was nearly ready. The river was about 30 feet away for water. My bed clothes were thermal top and bottoms, and thick socks, and a pair of outdoor slippers, which are really good to keep your feet warm. I sat there listening to the sounds of the river and the last sounds of the birds. The stars were beginning to appear, with the three sisters being quite prominent. The clouds were slowly creeping in again, and you can see them against the blackness of the sky. This made the stars appear and then disappear. So this was now a good time to get the stove out and get some water boiled for a cup of tea, which was well needed. I brought the little Van Gogh stove, which is a compact one, in a little plastic container, which is great. I screwed the gas canister on and got this water in the pot and on the boil. There is something special and nice about a fresh cup of tea when you're having set up a camp. Pouring the boiled water into my cup, adding a sweetener and a little bit of proper milk. That's a wee perk I normally bring when I'm doing a solo camp night away. Holding the cup in my hands to start the warming process and taking the edge off of things is a good feeling. So I felt hungry, so next thing to do was dinner. Get that on the go. and tonight I was having tortellini pasta. It doesn't take long to cook, so while this was simmering away, I could enjoy my cup of tea. Draining the water from the pasta, I actually just ate it from the pot. That's the beauty of these little camping cooking pots. They're so small and they're multi-purpose. Another great feeling sitting down to get a hot food into your body, and even better when it's dark, cold and damp. It was a perfect meal to heat me up. Now filled up and warm inside, I sorted my rucksack with what I needed and what I didn't need, so it was less hassle to get to stuff during the night. My food was inside the tent along with the water, pots and some cooking items, so they were all to hand. I was soon yawning my head off after having such a long and heavy hike. I had chocolate, some nuts and extra food items just in case I was hungry. The sky was now clouding over, making this camp very dark. Very dark indeed. There was no light from anywhere. This truly was a dark spot, which is really nice to have. Making another cup of tea and opening the luxury packet of nuts before I settled down. The stove was on for the last time to fill the hot water bottle, which is one item I do bring on many camps. Tucking my thermals and my socks around the hot water bottle to heat them up, as I would be in them soon. I rinsed out my cup and scrunched up the packet of nuts for tomorrow. It was now or never to get out my walking clothes and into my night clothes. I find it more relaxing and comfortable when I get changed for sleeping, or maybe it's just all in my head. It was a cold and chilly night as my trousers and top came off. Putting my thermals on with the odd patch of heat hitting the skin and on with the bottoms and then the socks and slippers, it felt really good. I put the damp trousers and top along with my socks into my sleeping bag so that my body heat and the hot water bottle helped dry them out. Finally in my night clothes, it was time to get my head down and all warm and cosy in my sleeping bag. Saying goodnight to the darkness, I zipped up the tent and then my sleeping bag, and slowly but surely, I drifted off. Out with the light, I closed my eyes. I woke many times during the night, and I had no idea what time it was as everything was switched off. I tossed and turned as usual. I did drift off and had a good few hours in the early hours leading up to the morning. I finally awoke with the sounds of the birds singing, and the dark was showing some signs of light. I was warm all night, which was good. The air was cool as I zipped down the outer fly to check on the weather. It was a damp, cool morning. Grey dark. So I zipped the tent back up and took 5 more minutes to let myself wake up and adjust. I have to say that by putting my clothes in my sleeping bag at night was a great idea. In fact, it's a fantastic idea, so it's a must do. They were dry, so that was half the battle when I strip off my thermals and get into these walking clothes that were semi-dry. It's never pleasant. The anticipation is getting worse when you get changed in the morning, especially into colder gear, so that's why I do it. I did put a fresh pair of socks on because your feet are important. Now dressed and daylight showing itself, I needed a cup of tea to start my day. The sun was clipping the hilltops and lighting up all the faces covered in bracken, making it look a lovely orange. This kind of morning makes you feel good. I was actually in a dip, so I couldn't really see the sun itself, but it was a great feeling with a cup of tea in hand, taking in the views all around my camp area. It was still early, and I had a few things to talk about today, after breakfast, that I couldn't do yesterday. My breakfast was fried Spam, so like bacon, just something different from my usual porridge. Slicing it up and frying it in the frying pan was pretty simple, and worth having in my opinion. It hit the spot, and again heating me up, followed by a Weetabix drink, which was not too bad. With breakfast done, and the sun just about reaching the tent, it was time to talk about the new kit and gear I was using. First, I had two Nalgene bottles, both different types, a wide neck and a thin neck. I think that's how they class them. I would normally just take one if I was going away for a night's camp, but I wanted to talk about them both, so I brought them both. I found them great, well robust, and a good measuring guide on the side. It's early days, but first impressions, they are tough and they're ideal for what I need. The wide neck bottle I brought for easy filling, and the thin neck one was more ideal for drinking from. But to be honest, they were actually just as good as each other. So they were fine, they were a great size compared with my other water bottles, and they fit in my rucksack very neatly. They're about 1,000 millimetres or a litre, or otherwise 32 ounces, with a little bit of space at the top. I have heard that you can use these as a hot water bottle, but I haven't tried that yet, so I will try that at some point. So to fill these up, I actually brought the Platypus 2 litre Gravity Works filter. It comes in a great pouch, keeping it all together. It has a main bladder for the unfiltered water, with a pipe that fits to the bottom and leads to the actual filter itself. And I can only describe it as like a tube of Smarties. And on the inside of that filter is all the elements to filter the water. At the end of the filter is another pipe, and that can either be used to pour into the bottle to fill up, or you can attach that to a second bladder pack, which you can use for storage. So that saves you walking back and forward to filter more water. You can take this away if you're not near water at all. So I found this water filter system really good. In fact, I would say it's really, really good. It's amazing. I think it's actually one of the quickest filters on the market at the moment. And I will be using this as my go-to filter. It's really good, and although it was the first time using it, it was very simple, and that's what I liked about it. Very quick and simple. Finally, I was wearing a new pair of walking trousers and a jacket, and these were from Mountain Equipment. The trousers were great, and they had a little bit of lining in them, and that's what kept me warm. So they weren't too thick. They were really comfy and had the usual pockets in each leg and a zip that comes up from the bottom of your foot about 8 inches so that you can get to your footwear. I found these great for walking in. They were warm and I wasn't cold at all with them. They were really nice comfy trousers. The jacket was a down jacket. It snugged my body really well and that was just amazing. Loved it, and it was good for keeping heat. So there's so many of these jackets on the market at the moment. I was walking round and round the shop looking at them and trying on a few. So there was so many to choose from, so please take your time when you're looking for one of these style jackets, if you're wanting one. I wouldn't say it was waterproof. Probably drizzle-proof, yeah, but definitely not for heavy rain, for sure. So probably if you're cold at night in your sleeping bag, this would be a great little jacket to snug your body and keep you warm at night on these cold nights. So yes, again, really good quality clothing and warm and very lightweight. So at the moment, it's a go-to jacket for me, especially with the weather, the good weather coming in. So that was my new pieces of kit I was reviewing. And why not? It was out in a wild camp, so it was a great time to do it. Although it's all new stuff and it's early days to test, so I will try it more and more as days go on and weeks go on. But just wanted to say that these are probably relatively expensive kit that I would normally buy, but this is all for my own benefit. There is plenty of stuff on there that is a lot cheaper, so you just need to shop around and see what's best for yourself. But these, you don't have to buy anything that's super expensive just to have a good camp. So bear that in mind and shop savvy, I should say. It was now time to take this tent down and get all my kit packed away, and do this while the sun was heating up the air and making it very scenic. It didn't take long to pack everything away, making sure all my rubbish was gathered up and packed away as priority. And we also leave no trace, as always. That's what we do. This had been a cracking little spot, and would definitely come back here. But this is not the end of my adventure. I still had one last thing to see. After all, this is where I'd come all this way to see it. So all packed up, I started walking up the side of the river in this amazing little valley. It really was a stunning walk up the riverside. Some areas were very tight to pass, with steep grassy ground, and others were covered in steep rock, looking very Jurassic. Just a little bit further up, it came into sight. First I could hear the roar of thunder, and as I walked closer, it got even louder. I had finally reached the Devil's Back Door. The mighty roar as water poured off what I would say was a 40-foot high rock face, crashing into a big deep pool below. This was absolutely stunning. What a location. This was a fantastic waterfall to see. A hidden little gem of a place, out of sight, and way off the beaten track. I walked up the grassy bank beside the river as far as I could, and stared at this awesome waterfall. I enjoyed every moment and time I spent here. This is what I'd come to see, and I'd come a long way to see it. There was gallons and gallons of water a second pouring off this waterfall. I'm probably way out with my measurements here, but it was absolutely spectacular. What a lovely sight. There was nobody else here, so I had this all to myself. And if the weather was warmer, I probably would have had a swim, as it looked very inviting. But it was a cold morning. And yet, okay, I wasn't brave enough. I've said it. So after spending some time here at the Devil's Back Door, it was time to get out of here. So I only had two ways of getting out, back the way I came, or head up a steep face up onto the top. My choice was to go up, as I like to explore. So taking my time, slowly and safely, I took small steps to climb out of here, and there was no rush to do so. It took me a while to get out of this steep area. I got to the top and looked back at the waterfall and surrounding area, and it had disappeared and blended into the vast amounts of bracken and heather around it, so it virtually became invisible, which was very weird. I stood taking in the views of the vast areas of moorland, and the wind was picking up as I had reached the open ground on the top. Heading up further, I joined a shepherd's quad bike track, which was winding away through the heather, and it took ages to get back to the main path I was originally on. I had actually done a big circular hike, but now back on the track again, and walking back through the boggy wet ground. It was actually better going back the way, as most of this was all going downhill. Passing grouse that flew up in front of me was really nice to see. There were few and far between, but it was really nice to see them. Through the metal gates and back down over the metal bridge was good feeling. Just further on was a large cairn at the side of the track, so being curious again, I went to see what this was all about. I had passed a few more ruined buildings in the area, just a short distance away. A plaque on the cairn shed a good amount of light on this area. This cairn was marking the spot and area of the man John Loudon McAdam. And for those who don't know the name, you'd be very aware of what this man did. He was the man who invented tar for roads. And this area marked where his tar kilns had been between 1786 and 1827. I thought this was pretty awesome. especially to bump into off by chance. There were areas of black stone or old gravel, and I assumed that this was old excess tar spoil or something like that. John Loudon McAdam was born in Ayr, and had used the area of Muirkirk at this site to produce tar. I found this absolutely fascinating. So if you're interested in researching John Loudon McAdam, look him up on the web, and I'm quite sure you'll get some really great info on him. 10 minutes walk from here was the car park where my adventure started, and it's here where I will end this. This was a long hike and turned out to be some 22 kilometres, or 13 miles, and with my rucksack, up hills, over open ground, and over unpathed moorland. This is me just trying to justify my long adventure. There are other ways to get to the Devil's Back Door, which may be a better option and slightly easier. As long as you have good footwear, good clothing for the weather, you'll be fine. There was poor mobile signal up there, and in some spots there was virtually nothing, so please be aware. So this is where I wrap things up, and it leaves me to say thank you very much for listening to my podcast adventure story. These podcasts are my YouTube videos made for you in audio and in more detail. The music for this podcast was from Epidemic Sound, so nothing has been exaggerated in this podcast and is all edited by myself. Until next time, enjoy the outdoors wherever you go. Thanks for listening. I'm Steve Walker, and this is a podcast for camping on the wild side. Cheers for now.